Hey, this is Jake. A quick note about the audio in this episode. So Lee's audio was somehow compromised during the recording of this episode. I know he was in the process of moving at the time, and so his setup wasn't the normal setup he usually uses to record, and something went wrong in the recording process. Luckily, we had some audio instead of no audio. So after listening to it, we loved the content of the episode so much that we decided not to scrap it entirely and just move forward and hand it over to our audio engineer, Aaron Dowd, who has done his best to clean things up. Thanks a ton, Aaron. Finished not perfect, right? Okay, I just wanted to let you know, going into this episode, why Lee's sound was a little off. We really hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry, and all three of us are professional illustrators. And for about the last 25 years, we've all been working with just about every major publication in the business. We've published over 50 books total, and we've all taught illustration at the university level.
Yep. Each week we're going to tackle a different subject, and it's going to relate to illustration in some way, hopefully. And sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to argue, but hopefully you're going to learn something new each week.
All right. So today, Lee was going to take us through a topic, and this one would be pretty interesting. I know I have some things to say about it, but Lee, I'm just going to turn the time over to you and let you take it from here.
We'll dive in. I hope this is interesting. You know, every time we're coming up with these topics, and this is one that I've been pushing it in some of the other videos of that we're not just picking something to work on. We're picking a life that goes with this, and you know, because being an illustrator is kind of all consuming. You're all in. It's not just something that you barely do, unless you're Will, and then you just go play racquetball at the end of the day. Just kidding.
I see how that comes full circle from what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to talk about the life of a day in the life of an illustrator, and what that's like, and what we go through, and some of the things, because I think a lot of people, especially students, I know we're getting a lot of comments on iTunes that are saying, oh, you know, I'm an illustration student, and I'm listening to you guys as I'm working on my class projects or whatever. And, you know, we talk about the marketing and the networking and the advertising and all this other stuff, you know, and even doing the artwork, but we don't really talk about the life and the pace and, you know, how this career just kind of works out in a day-to-day way. So that's what I wanted to talk about, a day in the life. I think Will and I are going to come at it from a book illustrator perspective. And what I'd like Jake to do is kind of comment on the entertainment side of some of these same ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of the general general kind of outline. We'll see how it goes. So I've made some notes and we'll just kind of walk through them. So my first thing that I have to talk about is describe your day when you're working on a book. Like, what is the day, just literally like just the average day, look like as a book illustrator? And so for me, that is getting up, and it's actually three parts to that story. So what is a day like, and can you walk us through a project? So how does a project work? And so for me, the day starts out really early. I always get up really, really early. As a book illustrator, you don't really have hard deadlines that are daily. And so the first thing I end up doing is creating these arbitrary deadlines for myself, because when you get a book job, it basically, there's an end date. Like, you have 9 months to do this project, and now you have to fit all these little small steps so it all works out into that 9 months. And so I start out the day just kind of trying to plan that. And that's harder than you might imagine, because if you're a student and you're in school, typically you know exactly where you're going to be at 9 a.m. You're going to be in this class. And mm-hmm. your teacher says, oh, you got 2 hours to do sketches, and then we're going to look at them. It's really regimented. And I don't know if you guys ran into that as in your book projects, but it's just so wide open that you have to start being good at scheduling. So I wake up and I start to do my scheduling. So then I go right into my book work, and that is
Before we get into that, I just want to talk about schedule. That is, man, the sooner you can learn how to schedule your time wisely, the better you're going to be overall in your career. And my evolution with that was because I had worked for years in a studio where you're given a schedule and you're given assignments. And when I started working for myself as an independent creator, oh man, that was one of the hardest things to deal with. And so it started out where I was just keeping track via to-do lists. So I would make a to-do list for every day. And because I would get at the end of the day and I'd be like, what did I accomplish today? I don't feel like I did anything. And so when I started looking at a to-do list, I saw the little check marks, I was like, okay, that's what I spent time doing. And then that turned into actually scheduling those to-do lists on a calendar in days in advance. And it turned into like actually scheduling it. And now I have a weekly plan, I have a monthly plan, I have a daily plan. And I review what I did and if I accomplished things that I set out to do. And it's been super helpful to manage everything that's going on.
Yeah. I mean, when you realize how much time goes into a project and how much goes into each step, you kind of have to understand your scheduling at a very kind of micro level. Like somebody says, oh, how long does it take you to do a painting? That's always the question I get. If you guys could probably get the same thing. And so when you get that question, you think about how long did I actually paint something? So it might be 8 hours, maybe 10 hours or whatever. But there's a whole string of things that happen before the painting actually happened, which is the sketches and the revisions and the false starts and the research and all that stuff. And as a book illustrator, you really have to understand every single one of those steps in detail and how long they're going to take, because otherwise your schedule will get derailed. Did you guys have to learn to factor all that stuff into your schedule? Like these little pieces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Often the hard
way. So I have my day divided into creative time and what I call administrative time. And I'm more creative in the morning, so I try to save things like writing and creating art and anything that involves like sort of deep work where I don't want to get interrupted. I save that for the morning where I'm fresher. And then stuff which I call shallow work. And these are terms I got from Deep Work by Cal Newport, which is a book that I would recommend anybody creative to go read. But the shallow work, like checking emails and putting out fires and, you know, applying for stuff and buying supplies and things like that, I usually save for the afternoon, as well as like phone calls or recording podcasts or things like that.
Yeah, that's smart. I do the same thing. I recommend that book highly. I do the exact same thing. Most of my illustration work takes place between 6 a.m. and probably noon. And after that, it's, you know, all that other administrative mm-hmm. stuff and organizing stuff and contacting people and all that kind of stuff. But I'd like to get into this a little bit more than the day, just the hourly kind of breakdown of my day. I'd like to walk you guys through a project, and then maybe we do that with an entertainment project too, because I'd be curious to see how some of your production schedules have gone, just on kind of a day-to-day kind mm-hmm. of basis, or just that process. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I get a project, how that happens is it typically 99% starts out with an email from my agent, and she says, hey, there's a publisher that is interested in you in doing a book. And so that's the first one. And typically I don't even get the manuscript attached to that one. It's just that inquiry email. And then I write back and say, well, of course I'm interested in it. And it's funny because there's never been a time where I would say, no, I'm not interested in hearing what this opportunity is at all. So I don't know why they don't just go ahead and send the whole thing. But I write back and I say, I'm interested. And then they say, okay, they send a manuscript. At that point, and read through the manuscript. And at that point, you can either, you know, look at your schedule and see your gauge your interest level on this project, and either say, yeah, let's move forward on working out a deal. So then I send that to my agent. My agent typically goes back to the publisher and says he's interested in doing it. We can do it in the time frame you guys want to do, and let's start talking budget. And so then, you know, the budget kind of gets batted back and forth. And by the way, this is why I like having an agent, because this stuff, it's not necessarily that the agent knows more about how much a book is worth, like how much to charge, but I don't want to go back and forth like that with my client and then have to work on the project with them.
Right.
Like, I want my agent to be kind of the a-hole.
Yeah.
And then I come in at the end, even though my agent's not an a-hole. Right. She's really sweet.
You're the nice guy.
I want her. It just can create some awkwardness, I guess. And
yeah.
I don't want to be the one to have that awkwardness with them. So they go back and forth. We agree on a schedule. And it's, again, it's a very broad schedule. And then we agree on a budget. And then, so that's when the next phase starts, which is research and development. And so for me, we were just talking about our mantras. And I was telling Jake and Will that I got a fortune cookie a long time ago. And it says, the fortune cookie was a good beginning is half done. And I use that as a teacher, as a mantra a lot. And I use that as an illustrator too. At the beginning stages of a book, I try to stay really open to a lot of different influences. I'll go to the art museum. Mm. With it, you know, I'll read the story and then I'll go to the art museum and just kind of see what filters through. Like, maybe I'll get a spark. I'll start gathering reference from Pinterest. I'll start writing things down. I don't just start to illustrate the book. I guess that's the important thing that I want to say, is it's not just a linear process. And I want to encourage you guys too, if you happen to be taking a book illustration class, sometimes when you're in school, it is so linear. It's like you get the assignment and you start on the assignment. But mm-hmm. I now try to leave myself open in the beginning to just pooling all this stuff together, and, you know, just seeing kind of what happens. And so I read through the manuscript, I highlight certain passages, and I'm sure you guys are the same way, where you instantly know some of the illustratable lines. Like, there'll be some scene in there where you're like, oh, I can't wait to illustrate that. And so I just kind of highlight that. I'll start making little doodles and stuff like that. So research and development for quite a while. I'll start do some sketches of the character, and just see where the whole thing wants to go. Now, I guess what I wanted to ask Jake is that the similar process to the first step in an entertainment project? Like, you arrive at the studio and they say, hey, we're going to make this movie.
Yeah.
Is that kind of step one?
Yeah. So typically in entertainment, if you're on the development team, that's sort of doing the early pre-production work, that's just ideas. It'll be kind of like that, where anything goes. Whatever ideas you guys come up with, we put them on the wall and we see what we like and we see what works and what's close to the vision. And that might go on for weeks to months at a time, where it's just you know, fleshing out ideas. And what I would do a lot of times when I worked at the studio was, before I'd ever go into the studio, the Greenwich Library was on my way. And so I'd stop and spend about a half hour at the library, just kind of leafing through books and looking at stuff. And maybe I'd check out a few and bring them in and use those as reference for whatever it was I was working on that day.
Now, are you showing, when you're at that early stage development, for an entertainment type project, mm-hmm. are you showing that work, that early work, to anyone to get an approval, or is it just for the artist's sake?
It is, yes. It's getting shown to usually the director, or creative director, or someone who's tapped to oversee the project. So usually there's a weekly meeting where whatever everybody's created that week, you can post it up and show it. Used to be that you'd actually print it out and pin it on a board back in the day, but now it's files and it's on a projector and it's scrolled through.
I guess that's an important distinction to make between, because that's what kind of want to highlight the similarities and also the differences between the two jobs and the life that you're picking. And so what I'm saying for book illustration, this first stage is, I don't show it to anybody. I don't have to show it to anybody, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice. If you're nervous about loose sketches and rough stuff, and then having somebody look at it and judge it, you know, and picking an entertainment job might be a difficult place. But if you're a concept artist, you're already going to be used to that anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, yeah, in entertainment design, there is nothing that you hold back, because you never know if like a little dumb sketch is going to be something that the director responds to. And so I would just post everything. I would show everything, that mm-hmm. even little like stupid sketches I would show. And what's interesting is, something I spent 5 minutes on might get a bigger response than something I spent half a day on, you know, with color and everything. Right. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the benefits of showing it to other people too, is you get different reactions and you can gauge kind of the good from the bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So the next phase, so after I get through that loose...
Before you go there, can I interject?
Please, sorry.
Oh, Will, Will's here.
Hey, Will.
Hey, Will.
I'm actually here in the house. I fell asleep for a second, but now I'm awake. No, it was something you said, Lee, about taking your time to do research, maybe do little rough sketches to collect reference and things like that. I think that you, as an artist, as an illustrator, you go through several phases. Maybe there's three. Maybe there's the first phase, which is, I just drew an eyeball that looks realistic, right?
Right.
And you're tickled and you want to do it again. You know, you want to, you put some, you know, you shaded her upper lip, or, you know, you to go for the Napoleon Dynamite reference, right? You did some kind of neat shadow and it looks 3D or what, you know, whatever it is. Then you get into the second stage where you're drawing, you know, figures, you're drawing characters, and you're working on a project. Let's say, you know, maybe it's your first children's book. Maybe it's your first big project. And the reason people dive in, I think, is because they lack the confidence to know what they're capable of. And so they want to prove to themselves that I can draw again,
right,
you know, that I can draw these characters. And they skip the step that you're talking about. They skip the research. They skip the taking the time to be inspired. They skip the loose stage of exploring compositions and camera angles and zooms in and zooms out and impact and the actual storytelling that you're doing visually. And so they end up creating value in sketches that are not the right sketch for the story, you know? And if I look at my first books, they're filled with that. And now I'm able to do what you're talking about, which is within the allotted budgeted time is still take those days that are important to basically explore and ask yourself, what am I actually trying to do here? What story am I actually trying to tell? How can I do this the best way? And how can I do it without creating value in a sketch that's going to make me not want to change that?
Right.
You know, especially when the art director looks at it and says, we want to go this other direction. And you are just dying to paint this scene that you've spent all this time designing and
right,
everything. And one of the things that I do is I try to create a relationship with the art director to where it's like, hey, for your eyes only, can I shoot you these really, really rough sketches? These aren't finished. These aren't the actual sketches I'm going to turn in. I just want to get your feedback on, you know, am I getting close to what is this? Am I totally off the mark? Maybe I'm misunderstanding what the author is trying to say here. And I don't want to spend days polishing or working on sketches that are completely wrong.
Right. Huh. Well, so you're already jumping ahead of kind of my step one is so loose. And I guess I should get into my step two, because it's kind of where you're going now. It's like my step one, I don't show to anybody. I don't even know where it's going. And I've kind of flipped and flopped my step one and step two, which my step two is I start to think about storytelling. And so in describing what it's like to be an illustrator, a book illustrator, this is my favorite part of being a book illustrator. If for those of you guys who are thinking about wanting to be a book illustrator, it is getting the manuscript, and I've already got some loose things that I've drawn, and I've not really drawn actually, just compiled images and references and ideas. I've looked at things, and I read the manuscript, and then I start to say exactly what you did. What is this story actually about? And this is the funnest part of being a book illustrator to me is really starting to dive into not what the details are, like, oh, I'm going to show a cool perspective on this shot, and like, I'm not composing my shots yet. I'm really trying to say, why does this story need to be in the world? And like, what does it want from me? Does the text say something? Or does the story imply something that's not in the text that I need to solve as an illustrator? And that's where you start, where you can start almost illustrating a secondary story within a book. I mean, I've done that a couple of times on books. And it just becomes really, that stage two is really just condensing down to what the story is, and then thinking about how you're going to approach it, and then you start to get into the more formal aspects of art. Do you have that same moment?
Yeah, because you know, Lee, you've got a body of work that you've done. You know that when you finally are happy with your sketches, that the book is going to look like you want it to look. The final illustrations, the final paintings are going to be great. And that's not, I'm not saying you're conceited by saying that. I just put words in your mouth.
Thanks, man.
But you know, you've done it enough that you know you're going to get to that stage, you're going to fulfill that stage, and you're going to have a finished book. And too often, I think, and I just can't, I will say this in class, and students still don't understand the, you know, not creating value. If there's one thing out of this whole podcast from me that people listening get, it's that if you create value too soon in a sketch, you're going to settle on something that is probably not the best storytelling vehicle in an illustration. You know?
Yeah, and everything has to service the story. So you can't go say, "Oh, I'm going to do this next book in this certain style," if the story doesn't warrant that style or that technique or whatever. You know what I mean? The story, everything starts with the story. It took me a long time as a book illustrator to learn that.
Yep.
Is you wait for the content to dictate the approach, not the other way around. And that's a tough one to get to, but it is so fun when you start to really look at the story and investigate what it wants. Jake, do you guys go through those kind of meetings in entertainment early? And when does that kind of topic come up?
Yeah, so usually the early development team is made up of a handful of artists that are pretty different in style, because they want to see, the director really just wants blue sky ideas, like what are the possibilities here. So so it could be that something is, you know, if you look through The Incredibles, The Art of the Incredibles, I know it's like a 10-year-old movie, but the art of books struck out to me because stuck out to me, not struck out. Well, it struck out too because it didn't have any drawings in it really. What it did have was collages. Yeah. And that's how they were figuring out these designs for these characters. And if you look at the final rendering of the movie, the shapes are all really tapered and shaped, like the characters are all shaped based. And you look at the collages and it's a lot of triangles and it's a lot of these power shapes for like superheroes. But they were just cutting out paper, different textures, and slapping them together and saying, here's a design for Elastigirl. Here's a design for Frozone. Here's a design for, what would you call it? Syndrome, which is really cool. And that can be just as valid as someone sitting down in Photoshop and spending the afternoon rendering out something. And, you know, when we were working on Rio, which was one of the films I did, we had a guy named Kyle McNaughton who was doing these beautiful painted scenes of Rio de Janeiro. And what was interesting is a lot of times I'm thinking, oh, this film is set in a certain aspect ratio. It's going to be, you know, 2:1:1:1. I'm sorry, I can't remember, but it's horizontal, right? At this stage, it doesn't matter. And so Kyle was turning in pieces that were horizontal or vertical. They're all vertically shaped, but it still got the feeling and the mood of what they wanted. And even though that's not an image that would directly end up on the screen, it was something that informed how the picture should feel and look.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting. I think there's a lot of overlap in the early stages of a project between because it's storytelling, between a movie and a book image or book images and loose development kind of sketches. Okay, so far we got, and it's funny because I haven't ever actually analyzed all the steps that you go through as a book illustrator. So it's email interest, email budget, accept project, loose association, analyze the story, and then the next step for me is just doing very loose sketches that are actual thumbnails for the book. And I'll spend anywhere from like 2 weeks on that. I'm typically faster than a lot of people just because my style makes it easy for me to be fast. It's not that precise. And then understand, I still haven't shown anything to an art director. So one of the things in working as a book illustrator is there's just a lot of time spent alone. We'll talk a little bit about some of the pros and cons of being a book illustrator and also being an entertainment designer later. But you're by yourself a lot. And so you just got to understand when you're going to reach out and work with people and have a plan for it. And so for me, I go through the loose sketches. Then I tighten up those loose sketches. I put them in place in InDesign, get the whole thing kind of working as best I can and without doing anything tight. And then that's when I do my next stage where I actually submit that work to an art director. But I might submit like 5 sketches for 1 spread and say, what are we trying to accomplish here? And that, like Will was saying, I reach out pretty early and say, you know, am I on the right track? Are we going in the right way? And then you start that dialogue with the publishing company. They have a marketing meeting and all that stuff. And I know that overlaps entertainment as well. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So they might dictate, like, say, oh, no, another book came out like that. It was marketed this way. So you got to change your approach. So then you go back to the endless, can be endless revision stages. We can talk about that in detail probably later. But you go through a couple of stages of revisions, and then you finally get to paint. And so it's a lot of steps between that first email that you get, hey, are you interested in this book? And when you start to paint, that process, how long is that process for you, Will? When you get the first email to when you actually lay down the first patch of color?
You know, it varies. I've actually done a book in about 3 months, which was insanely fast. And I only ended up with 28 days to paint the images. And I never want to do that again. That was hell. But usually I'll get 6 months to even a year and a half, some more like 9 months to a year is probably average. And that seems to be more typical. I mean, it's all over the place. And I think at that point you have to decide, you know, is it worth it to do something like this? When I painted the 3 little gators in 28 days, and during that time, my wife actually had she was a school teacher. She had a conference in another city. And I went with her to paint in the hotel just because I knew there wouldn't be any home distractions. You know, our kids were being watched after. So I went for 4 days and I painted from morning till night, other than, you know, our dinner meal that we went out together. And then I'd come right back and paint until I dropped again.
Wow.
You know, and I never want to. That was before I was working digitally. Digital would have helped that process out a lot. I've heard people of like dummying out a book in 2 weeks, but that seems way too fast.
Yeah, that would be at the other end of the bell-shaped curve. You know what I mean? Like where the average is. And so, I mean, I guess in talking about a life as a book illustrator, you know, something that if you're thinking about doing it, you got to be comfortable with these really long deadlines. And so something to pay attention to, something to take away from this podcast, is how you feel during a project. If at school, as you start to get towards your senior year, you'll notice probably, and that's not for every school, but the projects get longer to where they start to become semester-long projects. And I just remember like some of these semester projects that I would do with my students, by the middle to, you know, 3/4 of the way through, they would be bitching and moaning about these projects. And we're talking like probably, you know, two months in to a 3-month term. And I try to tell them, this is nothing. Like, this is just like step one. So you got to be comfortable, you know, maybe on a 9-month project. Or in Jake's case, like, how long are these movies going, Jake?
Anywhere from 2 years to 4 years, depending on which studio you're working for. But I was usually on a project for 2 years.
Now, did you get sick of it? Were you like, I don't want to draw Shrek ever again? Or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's what ultimately drove me to become an independent artist and work out of my house. Was it was actually Rio 2 that, or not Rio 2, it was the first Rio that I was just like, I can't do this. I can't imagine myself doing this anymore. Where it was the production side of it. The fun part was the development part, where it was just blue sky ideas and you could do whatever you wanted to do. But when it came to production, like I worked on a scene for maybe 3 or 4 months. It just kept coming back to me with revisions because the story was changing. And the way it works in entertainment is, at least in an animation studio, if you're in the design department, is there's different stages of production. So the initial production is just coming up with ideas as they're writing the screenplay, and you have a very loose understanding of what maybe the story is. You know some characters, you know some locations. Then from that, the storyboard department goes and storyboards the film out. And then when you're in production, once it's boarded, you're in production and you get an actual scene to work on. And so if you saw Rio, there was a scene where Blue, the parrot, meets Jewel for the first time in the the conservatory, the bird conservatory. And so my job was to design that room that they meet each other in. And so I had to know where the characters were going to be, what they were going to do. I had to know, I had to design a tree. I had to design, place the plants. I had to design, the background that was going to be behind it all. And that was really good. But it halfway through, would say, okay, now the camera's going to be over here. And I haven't designed for that side of the room. So now I got to go back and design for that room. Well, now the camera's going to go over here and we're not going to have the tree in it. Okay, so take the tree out. Now what am I going to do to replace it? And, just doing that over and over and over got pretty tedious and unfulfilling for me. When I worked on Horton Hears the Who and Ice Age and Epic, there were times where it got boring, kind of like that, but there was always some things that really, ignited my imagination and got me wanting to work on things. And now that I've been away for 7, almost 8 years, I've thought, I've grown so much as an artist now. I could really do a much better job working in an animation studio now that it's got me thinking like, oh, maybe I should try that for a couple of years. But then, is it worth it to go back for one project or two projects and kind of pause everything that I've got going right now? And ultimately I come back to, this is the life that I want, the life that I have right now that I've carved out, where it's, you work on a children's book and you have one or two that come out per year. And then, it doesn't take you a full year to draw the children's book. For me, it takes 3 or 4 months, spread out over the year. Well, what do I do with the rest of the time? And that's when I do SVS. That's when I do Inktober stuff. That's when I do my other, side projects and everything that I've got going on.
Let me come back to that because I'm going to address that in just 1 second. But highlighting what you just said is a really important distinction for people who might be in school or making the decision on, what to do with their life artistically. That one of the pros for being a book illustrator and or a comic, I guess, artist, mm-hmm. depends on where you are in comics, but let's say book illustrator for now, is that you control the project, the whole thing. Like you're controlling the lighting and the storytelling and all of it. So when this thing comes out finally in the world, after roughly it can be 2 years from when you get that first email to when you're holding a book, it can, or even longer sometimes. Yeah. But ultimately the package is yours. Which is a huge benefit to being a book illustrator. Whereas in entertainment, most of the time you're kind of part of the machine, would you say, Jake?
Exactly.
You're not really controlling any big part of it.
Yeah. You ever sit through the Marvel credits waiting for the post like credit scene?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Do you read all those names?
Everyone.
I read everyone.
No. So yeah, you have a name on that at the end of that movie, and that is so cool the first few times that you see it. and now what I do is if it's in animation, I love staying through the credits because I want to see who I know did what. Because after you've been in animation for a while, you get to know everybody and people move studios and things like that. It's really cool. But what I love even more is seeing a children's book and there's two names or one name on the cover. And it's mine, one of those is mine. And that represents the ownership that I have for that project. You know, it was, like you said, largely my vision, at least visually, and I get to express that and share that. And when people see that, they can attribute it to me. When you see Rio, you don't think, oh, that's Jake Parker's movie. But when you see The Little Snowplow, you say, oh, that's a book Jake Parker did.
Right.
Can I, there was one thing you glossed over, you passed over really quick. And we're talking about lifestyle and what's it like to actually live as an illustrator. But you said you build the book in InDesign, Adobe InDesign.
I do, yeah.
Will, do you use InDesign?
No.
Okay, so I've met...
I was happier when you glossed over this part.
I've met illustrators...
I'm going to do an hour-long tutorial now on InDesign.
Right, but I had never used that tool until maybe five or six books ago. But it was always like, man, I got to learn another program. I just finally mastered Photoshop, and I have a pretty good understanding of Illustrator. Now I got to do InDesign. But that book or that program is so valuable and helpful for making books, because you get to lay it out. You get to, you know, you get to see the book being like built in front of you. So
yeah, it's a good point, because it's like all the Adobe products, it's pretty robust in terms of all the features that it has, but you don't have to use all of it. Just using what Jake's talking about here is laying out of books, just being able to see, now here's page one, page two, page three, page four, page five, seeing them next to each other and in a row. There's nothing, I mean, I see some people laying out books in individual Photoshop files, and it is so clumsy to do that. InDesign is the way to go for that. If you're working on multi-page documents,
yeah,
you should be using InDesign. There's very few things like I think there's a definite way of working. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of techniques. This is one of them. Yeah. Like, InDesign is the way.
You'd have to be an idiot to do InDesign.
I'm going to have to defend my honor.
You'd have to be a Will Terry.
I have to defend this. So my work-life balance, you know how you talk about that, Jake? I have to have a work-life balance. So I'm just following your advice here on work-life balance. And part
Will
of that,
Terry, I'll only work until 4 p.m.
Part of that is not using InDesign, but I do use my iPad in a very clever way. And that is, I take my art director's layouts and I break them down so that I can see everything on one page. And part of my process, I knew I was going to get to this at some point during this, is I have a problem. I have an addiction. It's called the internet. And I have this, you know, like a lot of people, I got Facebook, I got emails, I got all these ways of people getting to me, little bells and whistles going off on my phone. So I sequester myself in my car sometimes and do a lot of drawing with my phone. I'll just do it in the driveway. Sometimes I'll just go out to the car, and you know, I don't get the internet on my iPad. So there I'm sitting there, and I get big chunks and blocks of time where I can just design and not be interrupted. Because to me, the design work is the most cerebral. You know, when I get into the rendering, I can have a conversation. Someone could be looking over my shoulder. Right. I could be talking to them while I'm rendering. I can watch a show. I can't watch a program or really listen. I listen to music when I'm designing. And I love that process of doing everything on the iPad, because I can, no matter what happens, if I have to run a kid to the doctor's office, if I have to go somewhere, I can just keep working. I'm taking my little mobile studio with me wherever I go. So that's what I like. But I don't fault you guys for doing the InDesign
thing.
Hey,
let me grab onto something that you're saying there, because I don't care about the software or anything like that, but you brought up a really good point. Again, I'm trying to highlight differences in the way you're going to live your life. And one of the things you're talking about here is really interesting, that we might take for granted, actually, at this point, because we've been doing it for so long. But the working as a freelance book illustrator, and with the projects being so, the deadlines being so loose and long, is that you can work kind of whenever and however you want, for good and for better or for worse. And so if you've got a hectic schedule, if you've got a kid or something, you can accommodate some weird stuff that working in a studio 9 to 5 could absolutely not accommodate. Right. What you're talking about there, like being holed up in your car drawing, you know, that could be a perk or that could actually be a downside. It depends on the individual person. But the point is, you have the freedom to make that choice. You know what I mean? Which is kind of cool. Not a lot of careers have that.
If you were to go out and work in your car at a studio or
I'll see you guys later.
Or decide, you know,
in the parking lot.
Or decide, listen, I'm just not feeling it today. I'm gonna go home. That doesn't quite fly. Really. It depends on how loose the studio is with that kind of stuff. And ultimately, if you deliver your work on time and plenty of it, you know, that's good. But, you know, there's meetings and there's people when you're in the middle of production and you're in the art department, you're not just working with the art department. You're working with four different other departments and they might have questions and need you. And so, you know, there's days where I might not get any drawing done, but I'll have meetings and I'll have, you know, one-on-one sessions with the modeler or with the layout artists or with the storyboard artist or something like that, and just kind of figure out what they need from me and what I can do to provide for them so that they can do their job as well. So you can't like leave them just because you're not feeling it, you know?
Yeah.
I would say,
So like I said, each.
I was going to say, if that's another thing to look out for. If you like collaborating and working in that environment, sort of a busy, bustling environment, then yeah, studio is definitely for you.
Well, I want to, and also a structured environment, mm-hmm. because with that pro of being able to be free as an illustrator and work in your car or you know, take the day off because you're just not feeling it, there's just no roadmap for what you're supposed to do at any given moment. And sometimes that can bring a lot of stress. Enough freedom is actually a bad thing, in my opinion.
Right.
Does that make sense?
I
mean, it can be hard to just know how to get back to time management. It can be hard though, even making my schedules and trying to account for everything. It can be hard sometimes to just figure out what is the most important thing you should work on at that given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there can be a little bit of kind of anxiety about it. I wanted to touch back on something Jake was saying a second ago. Again, one or the other, it's a pro and a con together. So I guess we can figure out which one it's more of. As an illustrator, as a book illustrator, most people do not make a full living from being a book illustrator.
Correct.
That's a super, super important point to know. There's only a handful of people that are doing that and they do nothing else. Now, so Jake said, you do two books. He does two books a year and he's got time for Inktober. He's got time for, other projects. And I do too, and Will does as well. Part of that is good in that it varies the work quite a bit, but it's also you have to do that. And we all do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, I talked to a couple people the last couple of weeks about, you know, maybe art isn't the thing that I do full time. Maybe it's a side thing. And I found this article that talked about Milton Glaser, who's a composer. And the article starts out where he's actually shows up at one of the apartments in New York in plumber's outfit with his toolbox, and he starts to fix a faucet because these people needed their faucet fixed. And it was happened to be that the editor for, I don't know if it was the New York Times or if it was some other publication, but he's like, you're Milton Glaser. Why are you fixing my faucet? I thought like you're supposed to be composing music. The point of the article was maybe doing art all the time isn't the best way to make your art. Maybe there needs to be a balance between having a real job where you're interacting with real people and you're in real situations, and that's what helps you make the best art that you can make. And you could take, you know, the rest of your time to create that project that you're wanting to do. I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing that there's more than one way.
It's actually a great point.
Yeah. There's more than one way to do this. And so my advice to this one person who was asking me about it, I was like, hey, take 2 years off from your art and see what happens. Like maybe because they were getting super frustrated and they felt like they weren't advancing and they weren't feeling inspired. And I said, maybe take 2 years off and where art isn't like this stressful thing that you have to like create all the time, and you have to provide for yourself, and you have to be scrounging for art jobs, and it's not the right fit. Maybe you take 2 years off from that and you just go get a regular job. You know, maybe you work at a movie theater or Walmart or, you know, whatever, and or a plumber, you know, and then all of a sudden all of your creativity goes into something that's less stressful and less priority, you know, less, I guess it could still be a priority, but it could be something that has less strings attached to it. And maybe that's what unlocks it. And I like what Will said a couple of podcasts ago, like when you're digging a ditch, you're physically there, but your mind can be wherever it wants to be. But when you're working on a children's book, you cannot be anywhere but in that children's book. And if you're not enjoying that project, if you're not into that project, yeah, that's not a good place to be.
That's interesting. Do you guys, this is just a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I'm just thought of it right now, but do you guys ever have that job in your head that when you're not liking illustration, because I do want to highlight that a lot of people think that because we're full-time artists that we just love this the whole time. And there's not, there's days where you're like, oh, this is super annoying, and you'd almost rather do anything else. Do you guys have any hypothetical jobs or a job that you would say, oh, that's what if somebody could just cut illustration out of your life, mm-hmm. what job would you go to?
Have you thought about that, Will?
I've never thought about that. So you're saying if it wasn't illustration, what would it be?
Yeah. Somebody just said, you can't make any more money as an illustrator ever. What would you what do you fantasize probably, about? Or is there any job that kind of...
Yeah, probably teaching. Teaching illustration. Does that count?
No, that's still illustration. That doesn't count.
Oh, okay. So totally unrelated.
Yeah. Art is gone. Wow. Like art is out of it.
I've thought about this.
Jake, let Will think about it while you answer.
Yeah. Okay. So does writing count? Could I be a writer?
Yeah, that's your art. You can't make any art. You're done.
No, it's got to be something different than a freelance person.
Okay, so let me say this.
You guys make this difficult.
No. I'll make it easy. I've fantasized about owning and managing and operating a bookstore.
Hmm. There you go.
You know, I'd like to do that because books are great. I like reading books. I like suggesting books. I like I don't like managing, but I like the idea of a bookstore. I probably hate that job just as much as anything else. I did use, so when I was in high school, I worked for a movie theater. I was the popcorn boy, the concessions boy, whatever. But that was such a cool job because no one is at the theater who's like angry or unhappy. Everyone's there because, hey, we're going out. We're going to see the movie. Everyone's happy. They're having a good time. And you get to go watch movies. It's a perfect job for high school kid, and maybe 41-year-old Jake.
It's funny you say that because I hadn't put this in my top contenders, but when I think back on my job history, for a little short period in between high school and college, I delivered pizza. Uh-huh. And man, I had so much fun delivering pizza. It was always different people. And a lot of times you'd deliver to a party and they would give you a beer, even though I wasn't 21. Yeah. You probably said that. But I was a skateboarder at the time, and there was a big ramp that was right next to where the pizza shop was. So I would stop on my way back and I'd skate for a few minutes, and then I'd go. It was just so free, just driving around, delivering pizzas was pretty fun. That wasn't in my top. My top grouping now would be if somebody cut art out entirely, I would say I'd probably be, I think, a physical therapist, mm-hmm. like for sports medicine, mm-hmm. or maybe the guy who works in those little booths when you go to a campsite.
Oh, that's a cool job.
Those are my two.
That would be cool.
I would. So I have fantasized. You might shut this down, but I have fantasized about running a restaurant.
Oh, my God.
I know. It would be like a crazy amount of work. Does that count? Because it's still culinary art, right?
No, that counts. That totally counts. That's good. That's completely different.
I have several ideas for restaurants, but I'll probably never do them.
But how cool would it be to have a bookstore like the Green Bean in Portland there, Whitley. Mm-hmm. She's got the cutest little shop and she holds events there and it's like a part of the community. And I know bookstores are like, no one goes into bookstores to get rich, but the idea of being, you know, and this is so romantic too of me, but the idea of being
exactly.
a part of this community, and you know, it's like that movie, You've Got Mail, where the shop around the corner is getting put out of business by...
You got a Barnes & Noble around the corner.
Yeah, but Barnes & Noble, well, you don't have those anymore. Now you have Amazon on everybody's phone. But it would be cool to have a place, or maybe like Gallery Nucleus, Ben, down in Alhambra, California, where you have this space where you can invite people in and make experiences for people. That would be really interesting and really fun.
That'd be awesome. And I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, though, is that we're romanticizing these things, just like people romanticize being a book illustrator, or just like people romanticize being a concept artist.
Right. And if you ever talk with a shop owner or a restaurant owner or anything, they probably do love the job, right? They love it. But then they're like, you do not know how.
It comes with the day-to-day. Yeah. Aggravation.
The bathrooms are a mess.
Right.
So that's my segue. So the romantic idea, you know, we're talking about what it's like to really do this, not to have that romantic idea that we had of this job as a student or when we were outside looking in. So what's the biggest aggravation with being a book illustrator, and what's the biggest aggravation with being a studio artist? What do you think, Will, for a book illustrator?
You know, one of
them, the hardest part.
One of them is since I'm not writing my stories. You know, I look at the offers that come through, and sometimes I turn them down and sometimes I take them. And sometimes when you read the manuscript from an author that you're going to take, cause you mostly like it, there's still things in there that you would change, you know, things that you would do differently. So that might be one aggravation, is that you're not in total control, of the storytelling process. At least that's where I sit now. Jake, you've written and you've illustrated other people's books, so you've kind of transcended. I know, Lee, you're heading that direction too right now. That one. Another one would be when I feel like I really understand the story, and every now and then, and it's very rare because I have really good editors and good art directors. Every now and then, I think they've understood the story slightly different, and I feel like every now and then their decisions haven't been the best ones. But again, it's so rare that I've just learned to, I think a lot of your attitude really starts with you. You know, like if you're someone who you're just going to be bent out of shape. I mean, everyone has someone like this in their life that they can think of right now who sweats the small stuff, you know, always. It's always the small stuff that just ruins their day. And if you're that kind of person, you're probably not cut out for being an illustrator, because there's going to be little small stuff that could potentially ruin your day. Or you can look at it as, I am beating the system. I am not punching a clock. I am at home. I am, you know what I mean? I'm working when I want to. Someone, a friend wants to have lunch today. I don't have to ask the boss if I can have a long lunch. I just do it, you know?
Yeah. So would you say that's the biggest pro, though, what you're talking about now? Because that's kind of where I was going. It's biggest aggravation and biggest pro.
For me, and I really feel like there used to be a lot bigger aggravations, in that I used to take almost every job that came in, and a lot of those jobs were wrong for me. So I was creating my own aggravations. Those were my biggest aggravations. Now, because I'm taking only the jobs that I want to do, it's just fun. So the biggest aggravations are little tiny ones, and
awesome. And the biggest pro is the flexibility. Is that what you're saying, Will?
Yeah, probably.
I want to just add to being an independent artist. One of the biggest stresses for me is not having that steady paycheck. And so, you know, 1 month I might make 3 months worth of income, but then there's 3 months where it's like drip, 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 you know, just a little bit. And so that could get just a little frustrating when you're trying to plan and budget and things like that. And I would recommend anybody to have a buffer and a savings before you go down this route and try to maintain that. But like I said, or like Will was saying, that having that freedom, that schedule, you know, to just, you know, go see Infinity War on a Tuesday morning if you want, you know, like
when I'm riding my bike in the mountains, you know, mountain bike on a trail in the middle of the day, I tell myself constantly, don't ever forget what it was like when you did punch a clock and what most people have to go through. Mm-hmm. Don't ever take this for granted. You're getting away with something and make sure it keeps lasting, you know, like do whatever it takes. Don't get lazy, make it last because I mean, that's, you know, a lot of people, we met a couple the other day when we were backpacking who they decided to retire in their 30s and work later on. I don't know how that's going to work out for them, but they basically have been traveling the world now while they're young and before they start their family, before they get real jobs and stuff, you know, that might affect what kind of job they could get. But I mean, like some people have to resort to that. I don't have to resort to that, you know?
Yeah.
I will say too, like, you know, it's one thing to take off time for yourself, but like yesterday I had to leave it, you know, in the middle of the afternoon because my wife took on this huge project and she just needed help. She couldn't do it all on herself. So I was like, hey, no problem. I'll work extra tomorrow. I'll just go in early, stay late, and I can help you with whatever you need. And so I took, you know, 3 or 4 hours that day to help her with that project. And that's something that I really couldn't do when I worked at a studio. The other thing too, I have 5 kids and, I want to talk about another minus and another pro. One of the minuses is I have 5 kids and insuring them all, as an independent artist is like so expensive. Like just health insurance for our family is like really a huge burden. And so if you live in the States, that's something you got to watch out for if you want to have a family, that's just going to be something you have to factor in. And me and my wife have talked about it and she's like, you know, I like having a family and that's more important to me than having, you know, a nice car. So, so that's one thing. The other thing is when I worked at a studio, I had 3 kids. And then when I came home and started working independently, we had 2 more kids. And my 3 oldest kids, they're 17, 14, and 12 now. I barely remember what they were like as little kids because during that time, it was kiss them on the head in the morning and then see them as soon as I got home at night, see them at dinner, and then they're off to bed. And so in a day, I maybe saw my kids 2 hours out of an entire 24-hour day. And then I would see them on the weekends, of course, a lot more. I'd spend more time with them. When I worked at home, my 2 youngest, they're now 9 and 8. I really got to be a part of their life growing up, and I would take breaks in the middle of the day, 15-minute break, and instead of hanging out at the water cooler, I was playing blocks with my son. And instead of, you know, running to lunch, I was eating lunch with my daughter, you know, and it improved my relationship with those children so much more than when I worked at the studio. And I spent so much more time with my wife as well. She's a stay-at-home mom. And we got to hang out a lot more. And I got to know what her life was like as a stay-at-home mom a lot better and see the things that she was doing and dealing with. So that was a huge, just a huge...
Are your 3 oldest kids going to hear this and think that they got kind of chipped?
Well, what's cool is they get their dad home as they're older now. So... I took off 2 or 3 days last week to go with my 2 oldest to a youth conference and we got to pal around and be buds for 2 days. And I didn't have to make sure I had enough vacation days saved up. I could just make sure my schedule could handle it and take off. So, you know, it's cool. I don't make as much money as I made at the movie studio.
Would you say the money is the biggest pro and the stability is the biggest pro for the entertainment job?
Biggest pro for the entertainment job is stability, consistent schedule, consistent paycheck, and being surrounded by some of the most talented people on earth daily.
But how about all the layoffs? Like they deal, most people in those industries, don't they deal with a lot of layoffs?
When they wrap production.
Yeah. More so in TV. Usually at the animation studios, you've got a job for as long as you want it. At least that's the situation now. When the studios were kind of ramping up and figuring out how much does a animated, you know, CG animated film actually cost to make and how much can it make at the box office, they were fluctuating with things. But, you know, I know people who have worked at Blue Sky Studios for 15 years. I know people who have worked at other studios for that long or more. So layoffs is definitely a thing. You know, studios have closed, they've moved, but there's enough work going on in that world that if you're talented and easy to get along with and have a good reputation, you'll find work sooner or later.
Yeah, I'd say entertainment's probably easier to get into than book illustration. Would you guys agree with that or no?
I wouldn't be able to answer that because I've never tried it. So,
I mean, just for the average person,
yeah,
I would think because it seems like there's a lot of starter positions in entertainment where there's not a lot of starter positions in book illustration.
I'd say you're right. Like at an animation studio, you've got anywhere from 300 to 1,000 people working there, right? And if you're at all creative, maybe you're not the best artist, but you understand lighting and you understand composition, there's a job for you at that studio, which may not require drawing, but does still requires like an artistic eye. So so there's a lot more jobs in animation, but then again, there's a lot more people, I think, vying for those jobs as well.
Right. Good point. Well, I want to give my biggest pro and con for the book illustration stuff. The biggest aggravation I've had in this industry, especially early on, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will identify with this, is there's no clear path, and it's an extremely confusing industry. Probably the most confusing I've ever seen, actually. Even being a gallery artist, I think there's a clearer path than being a book illustrator because I'm not kidding. Like it's just like, oh, what do you put in your portfolio? Who do you show the portfolio to? How do you get an agent first? Do you wait to get a couple of projects first? Do you take it? Everybody says don't do educational work, but then that's all I'm getting offered, or that's the easiest route. Do I not do it, or do I do it? I just remember like, and there's no one to talk to really. I mean, hopefully you guys have mentors. If you heard the last podcast, we're talking about you have mentors that can help you through some of these things, but everybody kind of is left to fend for themselves a little bit and to answer the question for themselves on what to do next. And that answer is so incredibly hazy that I just felt like finding my career felt like walking through the fog. And then you'd find some rock to hold on to for a few minutes. And then you'd say, okay, I'm going to wander a little bit more. And oh, there's a rock. Mm-hmm. And that's how, and I don't feel that as much anymore. So that aggravation has gone away. Like Will said, early aggravations don't really, they're not the same anymore as you get through your career. But man, that was up to this point, or, you know, this stage of my career, that was the hardest part.
Well, and you're plugged in now. I mean, like we mentioned in that last podcast that we have quite a community developing in our forums at svslearn.com. And it's been really, really rewarding for me to see our different students that have taken our classes and that are now reporting that they're getting book contracts. And it seems like
getting agents. Yeah.
It seems like it's happening at a greater frequency as we go along. And it's super rewarding and it's super neat to know that these publishers are taking a chance on some of these younger illustrators, you know?
Yeah.
They're seeing something in their work that they're not seeing in a veteran's work, or the veterans turning them down because they've got too much opportunity. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it could be a budget constraint, or you see that raw talent. My last agent, I saw them when they were picking up an artist, and they asked me what I thought of them, and I said, I do not see that artist being able to be repped right now. They weren't at that space.
Yeah.
But they went ahead and signed them on anyway, and they definitely proved me wrong. After about a year or two, they're solid, and I didn't see that coming. So you just never know what people are looking for and how they're going to find it. But I do agree with you that now with people being a little bit more connected and access to real information, I think when we were all going through it, there wasn't a lot of really solid information out there, and so we had to struggle.
I would have killed for YouTube as a 15-year-old.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, right. Just how to draw whatever you want to draw and stuff like SVS. Oh, man.
And some of the other online, I mean, there's classes. A lot of online resources now. And, that's, you know, we're cool. One of them. But I mean, like, I think I've mentioned this before. We used to wait at the mailbox for the new issue of CA Magazine to come out, or the new Society of Illustrators mm-hmm. Annual to come out.
No, I remember.
That was the only time you got to see a big body of illustration.
Yeah, and I remember spending hours in the aisle of the library, the illustration aisle of the library, just pouring through those things, through those books, and then, you know, checking out a few of them and bringing them home, because I was so starved for inspiration, you know? You couldn't...
You guys remember seeing the first Art of books that came out? Those were like a revelation.
Yeah, yeah.
That showed process. And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, there's a step-by-step what? Like, you've never seen that.
Yeah.
That's the old school YouTube made, right there, is a 8-panel step-by-step.
They made the Star Wars books in the 80s. They put those out, and I had the Art of Return of the Jedi, and I still have it. It's just, the binding is gone. It's just loose pages because I flipped through it so much. But yeah, then in the 90s, there was like the Art of Mulan and the Art of Hercules and the Art of Lion King. Those books were just so valuable. They are valuable now because they're out of print.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them that started to kind of get into that crossover, like the Art of Monsters, Inc. was the first one that I saw where it's for production, for a feature film, but any one of those spreads could have been in a children's book. Mm-hmm. And that one really got to me. I was just looking at that one going, oh my gosh. I mean, it was just so, like, it was just such usable information. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the path is a little bit clearer now, a little bit faster. The biggest pro is, like I said earlier, for me, is just the ability now to come out of my studio, despite the lack of structure, and just be able to think, my whole day is spent trying to tell a story that I hope somebody else enjoys. And that's real super rewarding. That's a very, very rewarding final product, even though the path is kind of frustrating and hard sometimes.
Yeah. Cool.
So, well, man, we've been going for about an hour and 10 minutes. I guess we should probably cut it off. I had so many other little notes, but we've been kind of just meandering through this topic. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you guys found it interesting to hear, like, some of the, I think a lot of, if you go to SMEWI, a conference for children's book illustrators, everything they say is like, this is just a great job. It's very, very, like Jake was saying, romantic. And I hope this podcast has, I don't want it to be a downer either. I just want it to be like a real thing, that how people spend their lives. It's not just like perfect. And there's a lot of stuff to navigate.
Yeah. No, I think that was a pretty accurate, like, reconstruction of a career in illustration. And I've been out of entertainment for 7 years now, but I feel like a lot of that stuff is pretty much the same, because I keep in touch with a lot of those people. I visit the studios. I see how people are doing. So I think it's all pretty applicable. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts today have been Will Terry. You can find his work at willterry.com. And on Instagram, at Will Terry Art. Lee White can be found at leewhiteillustration.com. And his Instagram is at leewhiteillo. And I am Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com. I am at Jake Parker on Instagram. So if you like this episode, please share it around. Subscribe to us on iTunes. And we'd love to hear, like, your thoughts. If you have any sort of review or comment that you want to make on iTunes, reread them. We love them. I wanted to read one of them here for you guys, if that's okay. It says, okay, I've been searching and listening to many podcasts regarding writing, illustration, and publishing children's books. This might be one of the only rare gems where I learned something that I can immediately implement on my path of writing and illustrating my own book. It's less about the experts talking about themselves and their life story, and more about how you can reach your goals, as well as personal experiences we can all learn from. That was posted by Mathmute. And so I just want to say thank you for that awesome review. We appreciate it. All right. If you want to enjoy, Sorry, this is where it all falls apart.
Dang, you're doing so good.
If you're wanting to join in on this discussion, log on to the svslearn.com forum, where we've posted this episode in its own thread, and you can continue the discussion there. Chime in and let us know what your thoughts are. Thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time.